A cargo jet landed safely in Anchorage after declaring an emergency. The 747-400 jet owned by Evergreen International landed just before 7 o'clock yesterday morning at Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. Larry Lewis, an investigator with the National Transportation Safety Board, says cockpit instruments indicated possible problems with the hydraulic system. Federal Aviation Administration spokesman Alan Knightzer says the pilot reported an indication that the landing gear did not fully deploy. Lewis says the plane landed without incident. It was towed to a hangar to be inspected. The cargo plane was flying from Shanghai, China to Anchorage. There were 9 people on board. No injuries were reported. A 67-year-old Anchorage woman convicted of second-degree murder in the death of a longtime friend has been sentenced to 25 years in prison. Byrne Peterson was convicted in August of killing 58-year-old Colleen Fukuda at close range in the home that they shared. Peterson and her trial said she had been friends with Fukuda for upward of 30 years and that the shooting was an accident. She said the women had been drinking alcohol and arguing and that Fukuda had refused to help Peterson, who had experienced health problems, to walk to the bathroom. Superior Court Judge Larry Card said at sentencing that Peterson may have not intentionally fired the shotgun, but that her actions were reckless enough to warrant the conviction. A man convicted of harassing Sarah Palin's Alaska lawyers has been arrested in northeastern Pennsylvania on a probation violation charge. The U.S. Marshals Service arrested 21-year-old Sean Christie in McAdoo, Pennsylvania, after a brief foot chase yesterday morning. Authorities say he walked away from a community reentry program in Scranton without approval, was verbally abusive toward staff, and damaged the facility. Christie was sentenced in June to 5 years probation after he and his father entered guilty pleas to making harassing phone calls to Palin's attorneys. Sean Christie was also ordered to spend up to 6 months at the Scranton Catholic Charity Center. Prosecutors have said the Christies threatened both the former Alaska governor and vice presidential candidate and her attorneys. A federal magistrate ordered Sean Christie to be held pending extradition to Alaska. Haines Republican Representative Bill Thomas has asked for a recount. Thomas is 34 votes behind political newcomer Jonathan Christ Tompkins of Sitka for the House District 34 seat. Elections Division Director Gail Funumiai has set the recount date for Monday at 9 a.m. in the Juneau office. As Ed Ronco reports from Sitka, Thomas says he'll be out of town for the recount, but Christ Tompkins plans to be there.
Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins currently holds a 34-vote lead in the race, and he's received mail from the state bearing the title Representative-Elect on the address label. He says he'll attend in person to watch. The race for House District 34 has been back and forth since election night. Christ Tompkins was up by 44, then down by 2, then tied with Thomas, then up by 28, before the final vote count solidified the race at a 34-vote margin. If officially elected, Christ Tompkins would become the youngest current member of the Alaska legislature, but not the youngest ever. That title belongs to Terry Gardiner, who was elected at age 22 in 1973. He became Speaker of the House at age 28. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Meanwhile, Alaska's 2012 general election has been certified. Funumiai says the State Review Board has completed its review of all the precincts. Some of Alaska's small boat fishermen will have to carry an onboard observer when they participate in federal fisheries next year. The government's newly restructured program goes into effect in January, and for the first time, boats under 60 feet and halibut vessels are included. Matt Lichtenstein has the story.
Larger groundfish vessels have long been required to carry observers in federal fisheries for part or all of their time at sea, depending on their size. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration primarily uses these observers to record and manage bycatch, which is the unintentional catch of fish that the vessel wasn't targeting. For the most part, small boat owners and halibut fishermen have not been included until now. Julie Spiegel is a spokesperson for NOAA Fisheries in Alaska.
The new observer program applies to vessels and processors of all sizes, including the halibut sector. And it divides the existing observer program into two observer coverage categories, full coverage and partial coverage. The category for partial observer coverage, that is, those not required to have an observer on their vessel at all times, will have a new funding and deployment system.
That partial coverage category now includes the halibut sector, as well as vessels that are 57.5 feet or less in length. The agency will randomly choose boats on which they'll deploy observers. Fishermen and processors pay for the program through a 1.25% assessment on the value of the catch. Spiegel says the point of including smaller boats is to improve the agency's data and more equitably distribute industry costs. For this first year, at least, vessels under 40 feet will not have to carry any observers, although they will still have to pay the fee.
No Fisheries did work very closely with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, fishermen, processors, and other stakeholders on the restructuring of the observer program. And that process included quite a bit of opportunity for the public to comment to help shape the new program.
But major concerns linger for small boat operators, many of whom have very limited room on board for their own crew, much less another person. Fishermen are also concerned that bad weather and other logistical problems could complicate getting an observer on board when they're required. Linda Mankin is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association in Sitka.
From the beginning on this issue, the small boat fleet has said, we're willing to pay in on this program. We're willing to give the agency all the data they need for management of the fisheries, but we need a system that'll work for the small boat fleet that's not overly disruptive to our businesses or overly costly to small operators.
According to Bankin, NOAA did not accommodate many of the concerns raised by small boat owners. Instead of human observers, Bankin said the fleet had asked for electronic monitoring with onboard cameras. Such systems are in use elsewhere in the world, including the halibut fishery in British Columbia, and Bankin says her group spearheaded a pilot program using the technology for the last 2 years.
And the program was successful with a 96% success rate on species identification. We provided that data to the agency. There were our project partners. We expected that would ensure that EM would be available to small boat fleet as an alternative to humans in 2013 when this program went into effect, but the agency hasn't come through in meeting that commitment.
According to NOAA Fisheries, electronic monitoring will not be allowed as an alternative to human observers, at least during the first year of the program. However, the agency says it's working with a contractor to develop the technology, and vessel operators can volunteer to help with the study. NOAA Fisheries staffers have been scheduling public outreach events to talk with fishermen about the new rules. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Washington Governor Chris Gregoire has released a long-awaited report on ocean acidification. At a public ceremony on Tuesday, she announced major funding for carrying out some of the report's recommendations. Ashley Ahern of Seattle Public Radio Station KUOW has the story.
Billions of larval oysters have died in shellfish hatcheries in the Northwest since 2005. Coastal waters are becoming too corrosive for oysters and some other creatures to form their shells. The new report calls for more research on the local causes of ocean acidification, as well as funding for monitoring of acidity levels in coastal waters. It also proposes adaptation strategies, such as breeding shellfish that are resistant to acidic waters, planting native seagrasses to absorb more CO2, and even sprinkling the coast with leftover shells from restaurants to make the water less acidic, sort of like taking a Rolaid. $3.3 million will be put towards the creation of a new center at the University of Washington to study ocean acidification. The money will come from the proceeds of state land management, like sales of timber and shellfish, and from the state hazardous waste tax. I'm Ashley Ahern in Seattle.